I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
As far as doing something to my hair, no, not a chance. Ain't no need to.
I feel you.
I'm not on IG. I don't need to go get Brazilian butt lifts and fake lips and all that. No, I'm sexy just like I am, son.
You're hilarious.
What's going on? It's Keyshawn, and welcome to my show, Undisputed Presents All Facts, No Breaks. Today, we're going to take a little bit of a different approach, a little different, that's all. This is going to be a special episode with just me and my oldest son, Keyshawn Jr.
What up?
This kid here. What's up?
What's up? So,
OJ Simpson, what? You diving right into it.
I just want to dive right into it. So, yesterday, OJ Simpson died of cancer at 76, USC legend.
Why did you say yesterday?
Well, it got reported today, but yesterday he passed away.
Oh, okay. So he passed yesterday. They're reporting it today. All right.
Yeah, USC legend, you know, 3,423 yards and scored 36 touchdowns in two seasons. You know, our memories are probably different from growing up seeing OJ. So what was it like growing up with OJ? You know, because it's different from mine. Like I grew up with him in jail. So you know, yours is a little different.
No, he went to USC, so obviously this starts there, knowing him from USC. I never had a chance to see him play. I never got a chance to see him play football. Learned about him, obviously, from USC. Learned about his professional career, worked alongside Tom Jackson at ESPN for a number of years. And so he just, you know the stories based on that. But also, I met him as a kid at a USC football game. Along with Marcus Allen at the time, and he was there at the USC game to watch USC play, and I was there to watch him as well. But he, you know, he obviously was OJ, NBC, the whole deal. Mm-hmm. We were just kids. And then eventually in adult life, as I got to USC, you know, you just learn about him. You learn who he was, what it was all about. And you just, you know, it was like, oh, okay, that's OJ. That's the dude from Naked Gun. That's the dude from the Hertz commercials. And then over time, I had a relationship with him and his kids, his older kids, you know, because we were the same age group, peer group. We had our same friends. And so you know OJ, basically. Mm-hmm. But I know him more so as a football player, athlete, television personality, and a guy in commercials and whatnot. He was the gold standard of, I guess, the USC, what it was supposed to be, what you were supposed to be at USC, as well as off the field when your career was over. He was the Heisman Trophy winner. He was the number one pick in the draft. He was Hertz rental car. He was NBC. He was movies and Naked Gun and other movies. So when you went to USC, that's what basically was on the board, is when you come to USC, we want you to leave here like that. We want you to leave here like O.J. Simpson. He set the kind of, it's weird because I went to junior college. He went to junior college. I was the number one pick. He was the number one pick. We both went to USC. We both got into TV, you know, do commercials, all of that sort of stuff. So you kind of got these kind of parallel tracks. The difference with me, I'm still black. There's a difference. And so OJ kind of got sidetracked a little bit in his career, post-career. He started thinking he was white when he was really a black man, and later on in life, he learned that in the hard way.
He said he's OJ. He's not, he's just OJ.
Yeah, I get it, but he learned it. He learned it the hard way. That's the only, you know, when you think about it, when you look back at somebody's career, that's the one thing that you're like, dude, you black, man. Like, stop trying to be something you're not, because when the shit hits the fan, you're going to have to come back over here to us.
Right.
And that's eventually what happened when he was accused of double murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. He had to come back and get his own people to try to defend him and help him get out of the mess that he put himself in. But, you know, only thing you can say is rest in peace.
Rest in peace, man.
And, you know, thoughts and prayers to his kids that I know. And that's really it. Nothing else really to say.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the quarterbacks of the draft. It's coming up in 2 weeks. We got a bunch of guys that are going in the first round. It could be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, you know, Bo Nix. Where do you rank these prospects?
Well, I like Jaden Daniels before Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams before Drake May. Drake May before J.J. McCarthy. Bo Nix before Michael Penix. And Michael Penix before J.J. McCarthy.
Okay, so then which quarterback in this draft class would you want to play with out of those and why?
I would, you know, I like Jaden Daniels. I like his ability to run. He's not quite Lamar, but he's got some of that in him. He could deliver the football. Got a strong arm. He's a California kid.
But he runs a lot.
I like him a lot, though. I like him a lot. I like him a little bit more than I like Caleb. Caleb is a guy with, you know, who scrambles around, moves around, off-schedule plays, can still deliver the football. You know, Bo Nix, a little bit older, been around, seemed like he'd been in college for like 13 years. Michael Penix, to me, is a nice lefty, but I don't really like left-hand quarterbacks because I don't like the rotation on the football. But out of all of them, J.J. McCarthy is at least my favorite out of all the quarterbacks, and he's rising up apparently
to the first round.
The draft board in the top five picks. So it'll be interesting to see who gets fired with that one.
So you wouldn't want to have Caleb Williams? Because he's not going to be running as much as Jaden Daniels.
Nah, I like Jaden. I think Jaden...
For a receiver, though.
Yeah, if they both throw the football, Keyshawn, it doesn't matter. They're going to throw me the ball. I'm not worried about them running. Because if they run, they're going to get... If they running and not throw them when I'm open, they're going to get their ass cussed out.
Well, on Undisputed yesterday, you and Skip had college football legend Johnny Manziel join the show. You talked about how certain college quarterbacks are not able to transition to the pro game. Which quarterback from this draft class has the best opportunity to have immediate impact similar to C.J. Stroud did last season?
I feel like it's going to be Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jaden Daniels and then Caleb with the weapons in Chicago. If Chicago goes Caleb, they got some playmakers on the perimeter that could help him excel. But I think Jaden Daniels is probably the most pro-ready out of all the quarterbacks. He's probably the most pro-rated. He doesn't have to learn how to get underneath the center. He's underneath the center. He's in shotgun. Caleb got to kind of learn what they want to do in the pros. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a setback for him. I don't think J.J. McCarthy's quite ready because, he hadn't thrown the ball nearly enough, not enough snaps. Bo Nix got more snaps than anybody. And then Michael Penix is a guy that is a project, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, speaking of Caleb Williams, we recently defended himself on social media after Greg McElroy said he never experienced adversity. So first he wrote definition.
Greg McElroy always talking. Man, Greg McElroy needs to shut the hell up. Well, he's the same dude that tried to tell me Trevor Lawrence is a once-in-a-lifetime generational quarterback. Like, shut up. For real, though.
All right. Well, Caleb said, he wrote the definition of adversity first, and then he wrote, year one, he didn't start freshman year. Year two, he popped his hammy championship game first quarter, lost because of my hammy. And year three, 7-5, my last year of college ball. How do you feel about Caleb responding to haters on social media?
We really don't necessarily have to respond to haters. People going to feel the way that they feel and say what they want to say. Greg McElroy isn't drafting Caleb Williams number one. Greg McElroy is also the same guy that tried to say because C.J. Stroud didn't attend the Manning camp that he was less of a quarterback than the other guys that did go to the Manning camp. How did that work out for you? So if I'm Caleb, in all honesty, I wouldn't even be paying attention to what people got to say. I got him ranked number two behind Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that he didn't face adversity. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, playing college football at a high level is adversity. Greg McElroy, sometimes, Keyshawn, what you got to learn in this business is people just like to talk the talk. To be seen, they say stuff that makes zero sense.
Yeah,
zero.
I didn't make it make much sense either. But since we're on the topic of quarterbacks, the Cowboys are rumored to be a sleeper team to draft a quarterback. Do you think they should draft this position? I don't personally.
I mean, where at though? You, if you could take a quarterback every single year, you should draft one. If you could, if you have the luxury of taking one, doesn't mean you have to take him in the first round. Doesn't mean you take him in the second. You could take him in the sixth round. You have to. That position is such that you got to have quality backups in the National Football League. Now, if you're talking about taking them in the first round, no, they got two quarterbacks outside of Dak Prescott on their roster. They got Cooper Rush and they got Trey Lance. Uh-huh. Trey Lance was the third pick of the draft 3 years ago. He was the third pick of the draft three drafts ago for a reason. Even though it didn't work out in San Francisco, they drafted him for a reason because they thought he was good enough to excel.
And from what you've seen, what do you think of Trey Lance? Do you think you should
get a chance? He never got an opportunity.
You think you should get one?
Yeah, you got to give him an opportunity, a chance.
Yeah.
Whether it's in Dallas or somewhere else. He never got an opportunity. He got hurt. That's not an opportunity.
I feel. Did you hear about Jim Harbaugh's locker room changes at the Chargers?
No. What did he do now?
So apparently he rearranged the lockers in numerical order. Each player's nameplate shows their recruiting level out of high school. So what do you think of that?
So it says 2-star such and such.
Yeah.
3-star such and such. That's fun. I mean, it's fine. But I wonder why he did it. Because most of the lockers are defense offense. They split up. One side is defense, one side is offense.
Well, he changed it. It's now a numerical order.
I know, but that's the way he probably likes it. Teams that I've been on, we had defense on one side, offense on another. I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't matter.
No, I don't think it matters at all. Because you're going to go sit by whoever locker you want to have a conversation with and shoot the shit with and have fun with when you're in the locker room anyway.
Well, when you're a vet, how do you feel with the new coach coming in and changing culture in general?
It's fine. I had a new coach, went from Richie Kotite to Bill Parcells, and we went to the AFC Championship game a year later.
Right.
It worked. So
John Gruden, too, I guess.
Yeah, we won a Super Bowl with John, but the culture never changed because our culture was built and our foundation was built with Tony Dungy and Monty Kiffin. Monty Kiffin was still there with the rest of the staff. The only new person offensively, for the most part, was John Gruden. John Gruden was the in, you know, they brought in some offensive staff members. You know, my receiver coach was new, but I also had Richard Mann when I was at the New York Jets.
Okay.
But the core of our team and the foundation of our team and organization was there. Like we were not a bad organization. You got to change things around when you're a bad organization. You have a bad coaching staff. We went to the playoffs every single year under Coach Dungy. We just couldn't get over the hump. The Chargers, on the other hand, they just a bad organization at times and bad coaching.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into basketball. So Klay Thompson has been on fire this month. We're seeing signs of the vintage Klay before the injuries. With his free agency coming up at the end of the season, is it facts or fiction that Klay Thompson will be a Golden State Warrior next season?
It depends on how far they go in the playoffs, I believe. I think when you have a team like this that can make a run in the playoffs and they don't get bounced early, I think you see him come back. If they get bounced out of the play-in and they don't make the playoffs, and even if they made the playoffs and they got swept, then you could be seeing Klay Thompson in another uniform.
You don't think he'd just retire?
No. Why would he retire? Hell no.
He's old, but
the fuck you gonna retire for?
He's already gotten so many rings. Like,
no. Dude got about $150 million still left to make, and he got plenty of basketball. Nobody retires.
I don't know. He's gotten injured, all that.
Oh.
So Caitlin Clark has received a lot of praise for what she's done in women's basketball. But WNBA legend Diana Taurasi took some shots. Let's take a listen.
Right? When the college guys come out, they're waiting for them. I mean, Camilla's coming. Caitlin's coming. There's more than just that are coming. What will the league have in store for them when they get there?
Look, SVP, reality is coming.
Okay.
You know, there's levels to this thing, and that's just life. We all went through it.
Of course.
And you see it on the NBA side, and you're going to see it on this side, where, you know, you look superhuman playing against 18-year-olds, but you're going to come with some grown women that have been playing professional basketball for a long time. Not saying that it's not going to translate, because when you're great at what you do, you're just going to get better. But there is going to be a transition period where you're going to have to give yourself some grace as a rookie. And, you know, it might take a little bit longer for some people.
So, Dad, what was your mindset going into the league as the number one pick, knowing that people were going to gun for you? You know, you had kind of a little swagger to you, confidence.
Keyshawn, the least thing I was worried about is what somebody was going to do to me.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
They're going to gun for you regardless. Jealousy is going to set in. That's what it is. They're not the number one pick. You don't deserve to be the number one pick. They deserve to be the number one pick, although they were not the number one pick. That's the sort of thing that's going to happen. But Diana Taurasi, is only thing she's saying is it's not as easy as going up against high school kids that coming out of the prom. Now, all of a sudden, they in college and you knocking down threes on the head when you have grown women with families, okay, that you now have to go up against. They got to pay their house notes and their bills. It's going to be a different approach. It's not going to be easy. That's all she's saying. She's not necessarily hating, you know, to a degree, but you're going to have some people that question her skill set, question who she is as a basketball player, because that's just what people do. They're going to question you as an NFL guy. Oh, you're not that good. Why were you this? Why did they do that? At the end of the day, you're not paying my checks and you didn't draft me. And if I was Caitlin Clark, I'd say the same thing. When I get there, I know it's going to be a learning experience for a short period of time. But once I catch fire, I'm going to bust y'all ass. That's what I would tell him.
I was going to ask, how do you think she's going to do in the WNBA?
I think she's going to be fine.
Yeah,
I think she'll be fine. She can shoot. Right. And they're going to put her in position to excel.
Okay. Well, as a vet yourself, when you were in the league, was there ever a rookie player that you felt you needed to humble?
No, I don't. I never paid attention to anybody outside of myself, whether it was a rookie player, veteran player. I didn't get caught up in trying to prove nothing to nobody. I mean, I knew who I was. I carried myself the way I am now. I don't worry about shit that don't matter, don't pertain to me. I worry about my own house from burning down. You know, young players, they just going to talk all day long. I remember we played against Carolina. I mean, I was at Carolina, and we was getting ready to play Atlanta Falcons, and D'Angelo Hall had just gotten drafted out of Virginia Tech, and Steve Smith was supposed to be my crimey. He got hurt. And we're opening day, we're getting ready to play against Atlanta. And D'Angelo was just running his mouth, just talking. And I told Jim Moore Jr., I was like, man, his head coach at the time in Atlanta, I'm like, Jim, man, shut the fuck up before he pissed me off. And you know, and the other dudes on the team was like, man, leave that dude alone. Because you just, young dudes be excited about something and they think they could do something. He didn't have an easy day. It wasn't an easy day for him. No, it just wasn't an easy day.
Well, it
wasn't big numbers, but just in general, it wasn't an easy day. When I needed to block him, I rushed his ass into the water buckets. When I needed to catch passes on him, I caught passes on him. But that's how young dudes are.
Yeah. Well, it's evident, Dad, you've never been shy about being the man to the media. The producers found a clip of where it all began. Let's take a look.
As part of our relationship with the NFL and the NBA, we educate first-year players on how to deal with us, with the media. It's kind of like our own rookie camp.
All right, you guys have money, but you don't have attitude. You're too nice. It's pathetic. You're the man. Say it. You're the man.
I'm the man.
I'm the man. Come on, man. It's got to be like, I'm the man.
I'm the man.
Always refer to yourself in the third person. Keyshawn did. Kobe did.
Just cuss, man. Just cuss like a sailor. That's in now. They can bleep it out later. You got to say, that's a call.
We're making a difference, and you can see it every day.
So, Dad, that's a real legendary
commercial. That's what I had, the skinny face.
Yeah, there's legendary people in the commercial. What was it like being around Kobe and Stuart Scott?
Well, I mean, if you go back and you think about it, Kobe and I both came into our respective leagues at the same time. Same year, we both signed with Adidas shoe companies the same time. Same year, Sonny Vaccaro both brought us both to Adidas. Kobe was 18, 19 at the time. I mean, he was young. He just was a young dude. I mean, that's all he was. It's just young Kobe. Yeah. And he was an NBA guy. I didn't know no better. I was a college kid that graduated and went to USC, was the number one pick, and he was just a kid. I mean, you know, actually, Kobe was the person who taught me how to sign my autograph because we were flying together on a private jet to Portland, Oregon to do something for Adidas, some sort of event. And we had memorabilia we needed to sign before we landed. And I don't know, it might have been 30 different items, basketball, football, maybe it was like some jerseys or something. And I was signing them, but he had started when I started, but he had finished way before me because I was putting my entire name in the number and he just was writing Kobe 8. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him, I said to him, I said, Kobe, man, what, how the hell you finish so fast? He was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, man, I'm just, he was like, let me see. And he leaned over. He's like, well, that's the problem right there. I have my whole name. And he's like, man, you got to just shorten it to Keyshawn because there ain't another Keyshawn on this earth.
And well, now and there so, are, but back then.
Yeah, but back then, it's, yeah, no, yeah. It's not. But then at that time, I shortened it to Keyshawn in my number. Mm-hmm. That's before, cool. Yeah, it was no, my whole had, name.
Yeah, we used to live with him. He was like across the street from us at Pelican Hill, and he just had that aura. Every time I saw him, I was like, I'm not usually scared to say anything to like any athletes because like I was born, but like Kobe was different. But what about Stuart Scott?
Stuart Scott, when I got to ESPN, well, obviously I knew Stu before I joined ESPN, but when I joined ESPN, one of the things that has stuck with me in through this whole entire 18 years of doing media is he said, don't allow them to change you in who you are as a person and a personality. Don't all of a sudden be up here, you know, well, I think tonight we're going to look at, you know, don't be that. Be exactly who I am. Don't change for nothing, for nobody. Speak the way I speak, rock the way I rock. That was kind of his message to me from day one. And I used to work with him every Super Bowl Sunday. We did the wrap-up, the post-game Sports Center Super Bowl Sunday. So it would be me, Steve Levy, Stuart Scott, Trent Dilfer. Who else would join us at the time? I think it was just, it was us three. Maybe Chris Carter joined in. But it was mainly me, Trent, Levy, and Stu Scott. The entire time that I was on Countdown for them 10 years, we did the wrap-up show for Super Bowl Sunday. So I got a chance to obviously know him, know him very well. Was one of those heavy losses when he passed away,
yep,
of cancer. And he was good to me. He was always just good to me, taught me a lot.
Okay. Well, this is the part where I show you some social media stuff since you're never really on it.
So not on it at all. Social media blows.
So Phoenix Suns superstar guard Devin Booker was found trending as the possible mystery man at the barbershop this week. The mystery man was found getting his bald spot covered with a man wig. So now, Dad, I noticed your hair has grown in rather quickly. Would you like to admit anything to our listeners? You got any?
Where would my hair grow in at? Only thing I do is dye the grays out my hair because I got great patching and I get great lining around here. But as far as doing something to my hair, no, not a chance. Ain't no need to.
I feel you.
Now, I'm not on IG. I don't need to go get Brazilian butt lifts and fake lips and all that. Nah, I'm sexy just like I am, son.
You're hilarious. So Anthony Edwards recently dropped 51 points in front of 50 Cent. Dad, was there ever anyone in attendance that made you want to, you know, maybe put on a show, go crazy?
Nah, you know, when I played, I didn't pay attention to people at the games, on the sidelines.
Yeah, you were locked in.
I was playing sports. It's a little different in the NBA than it is in college, I mean, in pro sports or even in college, because you're on the sideline. Most people in the NFL especially don't get to stand on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. Professional athletes are the only ones on the sidelines along with their coaches. The NFL doesn't allow. If you ever notice, you never see celebrities during the game standing on the sideline.
What about
only in college? Yeah, in the pros. Say.
What about at USC? You ever have anyone there?
No, it was like a bunch of celebrities standing on the sideline at our games, but I wasn't worried about what they talking about. Shit, they got their money. I'm trying to get mine.
So 20-year-old Jackson Holliday, who is the son of longtime MLB outfielder Matt Holliday, got the call up to the big leagues. Let's watch this clip.
I want you to call your dad. Mm-hmm. I want you to talk to him, and I want you to thank him for all the times that he's allowed you to come to the clubhouse, mm-hmm, be on his pass list, you know, let you hit with the big boys. That's pretty special, and it plays into a lot of what you're about. The second thing I want you to tell him is that now it's time for him to ask permission to be on Jackson Holliday's pass list because you're going to the big leagues.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
That's all right. Awesome.
I'm fired up.
I'm fired up.
You've been exceptional down here, your brother. To be 20 years old.
I appreciate
to handle
that.
All this stuff, dude.
That's awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Call your dad.
I will.
So describe the feeling of knowing you're about to be a professional athlete. Like, we know you were going to be a top pick, but now you're about to get paid and you know it.
Well, I think you being drafted versus going through spring training and being called up to the big leagues is a little bit different, because you're coming from college and you're projected to be drafted at a certain spot. So you kind of already know, but when it happens and it goes down. So when you were not born, your sister Maya was born, and Maya was there with me as a 1 year old at the time. Not even one. She was like 9, 10 months old. Maybe less than that. Damn, let me think. December. Yeah, she was 96. Seven months yeah. old. You kind of know, okay, I'm getting ready to get drafted. But because of where I was drafted, there was this positioning that the Jets wanted me to sign a pre-draft deal to be drafted the number one overall pick. But I was like, no, I'm not. I'm good. I don't need to be the number one pick. I could be the number two pick and get paid when I'm supposed to get paid at the two spot, opposed to getting, you know, treated like the seventh pick going number one overall. So I told him, don't draft me and I'll fall to Jacksonville at two so I could get paid when I'm supposed to get paid. They drafted me anyway at number one. And at that point, you know, it was just like.
You still got paid.
Like, yeah, I was going to get paid regardless. But I still got paid the way I was supposed to get paid. But it was, oh, shit, we made it. It's, oh, it's cracking. Yeah. It's popping. It's,
I know you came from the ground up.
So yeah, it's real. Like, we getting ready to hit pay dirt. And okay. That was pretty much, you know, you went from that to making, you know, several million dollars.
Right. So before we wrap up, we got a couple questions from some fans. Gavin from Chicago asked, what was the biggest regret of your football career?
Biggest regret?
Yeah.
Never. I don't have any regrets at all. I mean, I tell people this all the time, and I still tell them this day. You can look at statistical numbers all day long, all you want. You can look at Randy. You can look at Jerry. You can look at Kelvin. You can look at Michael Irvin. You can look at everybody from statistical numbers. I put my film up with any of them. And I played with, I feel like 17 different, I think it was 17 or 18 different quarterbacks in 11 years. I won a Super Bowl. I was a Pro Bowl MVP when the Pro Bowl was really a Pro Bowl, not some bullshit flag. Okay, I went to championship games. I played in the playoffs. I was the highest paid at my position several times in my career. So it's like, there's really nothing you could think about and look at. I wouldn't trade my career for anybody's career in the National Football League, except maybe Michael Irvin and Jerry Rice, because they got multiple rings. Mm-hmm. Multiple rings. I got one, they got multiple rings. Other than that, it's so many dudes on the list that would trade their careers for mine in a heartbeat. And let's not even get into postseason career. Talk about that. That's like a whole nother category when you start talking about postseason career.
So you're satisfied.
Oh, man, how could you not be?
Yeah.
Number one pick in the draft. You played 11 years. You walked away on your own when you wanted to, with your pockets heavy, okay? Not light, heavy. And at the end of the
say
day,
it again. Heavy.
Heavy, heavy. At the end of the day, I could go and do whatever I choose to. I work at Fox now. I worked at ESPN for 17 years. So it's like, what you want me to? I done been on Countdown. I had my own shows. I done been to Super Bowls. I don't know. What else you want me to do?
I hear you.
Yeah. Come on, man. Stop it.
So Chris from Phoenix asked, Panthers, Bucks, Cowboys, Jets, which NFL team do you identify with the most?
Man, I get that question a lot. It just depends on who I'm around, where I'm around, and what region I'm in. Okay, if I'm in New York, New York fans, they treat me like I won 12 Super Bowls for them. Like, I could go no wrong.
Well,
seriously.
That's the best season they've had in I don't know how long, since you've been there. So.
Nah, it was the best
3 years.
I would probably say it was the best Super Bowl, potential Super Bowl team that the New York Jets have ever had.
Right.
And we were really good. We fucked up, but we were really good. So they treat me a certain way. Tampa Bay fans, they treat me a certain way, even especially now that they realize that John Gruden wasn't what he claimed to be. But prior to that, they treated me as if I was the devil because of the narrative that was set by some of the fan base. So they fall
into
that.
You're the bad guy.
They fall into the, I'm the bad guy, I'm the villain, I got kicked off the team. But they never really looked at it. Now they look at it and they go, well, yeah, maybe, you know, Keyshawn might have been right. So they treat me different. Dallas Cowboy fans respect me because they know how I get down and how I rock. We were not a very good team, so I'm respected across the board with Dallas Cowboy fans. And then Carolina, I was there for a short stint, so anybody that had a chance to see me play in Carolina, they respect me. But you're going to always have detractors no matter where you are at in life. You're going to have people, Keyshawn, as I always have told you, you're going to have people that don't like you, that want to see you fail. And the moment that you keep letting them see you fail, that's when you're going to fail. But when you stop from doing anything that they hope and pray that you do and you don't do it, ain't nothing they can say. They just stuck. They got to bite their tongue. They got to act like they like you when they see you. They got to say, hey, how you doing there, Keyshawn? When they was just talking about you negatively 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
Because that's how people are. That's how they operate. And I peep it. I see it. I just laugh at it. But no, New York was like the – New York might have been – it was a different time in my life, too. I was younger, and it was New York. It was the height of the '90s in the rap industry, East versus West, and I was on both coasts, so I had a little bit of that. In Florida, I went to Tampa. I won a Super Bowl, but once I got to Tampa, me and your mom, we got divorced, so I became single. I'm in Florida. I'm popping.
I was cracking.
You're older now. Got a bag. You know, I'm hopping on the PJs. It was just different. It was a different time. Okay. Then I go to Dallas. I'm a little bit older. So I'm like, I'm starting to wind down. Don't want to play football much anymore, but I'm still doing it. Then I go to Carolina. I was completely like, just let me make one last run at it. The Panthers had just gone to the NFC Championship game the year before, losing Seattle. My office coordinator that I have with the Jets is now the OC in Carolina. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go down here. I'm going to get a bag and I'm going to be able to contend. And then we all just, Steve fell apart. Jake DeLone fell apart. We just started falling. And then all of a sudden, we was a different team. And that's when I just said, I'm going to hang him up. I'm retired.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Panthers fan just because I was just old enough to see you play at that level. But speaking of them, who's your dream guest for the pod? Because mine's Cam Newton.
Cam will come on. We can reach out to Cam. He'll come on. I don't really have a dream guest. Like, for me, you want to ask a question? Man, I really want to sit down with the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. That's who I want to sit down with.
That'd be crazy.
I just want to have a conversation. I just want to have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
I really want to sit down with him and just ask him, why is there so much hate in his heart for the people in the world?
Right.
Because you know how I am. I'm deep when it comes to this sort of stuff. I want to know, why do you hate certain ethnicities, certain genders? Like, why do you feel the need to be so, have such hatred and vitriol in your heart? That's what I really want to ask. I just want to know.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'll sit down with him and his homies. We can all sit here and have a peaceful conversation and everything.
Hopefully it's peaceful.
Of course it would be peaceful. It would be peaceful.
So Kyle from Philly asked, I watched you on Irish Chef. What's the best thing you could cook? And I'll take a count. He could cook. Yeah, he's a good cook.
The best thing I could cook, he saw me on Iron Chef.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I could cook anything, really. I mean, I'm not getting into exotic meats and rabbit and squirrel fire, and all that type
fish.
Of stuff.
Your fish,
yeah, I can cook
good.
Fish. Yeah, I can cook. I'm gonna cook normal food. I'm gonna cook some chickens and some beefs and you know, some fish and seafood, things like that. Some pastas. I'm not getting ready to turn this into a culinary experience like that.
Yeah,
I'm not Bobby Flay. I'm not cutting open a goat and do. I'm not that because I don't eat that stuff. I'm only cooking what I eat.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. So when you stick with the chickens and the fishes and the
you
seafoods,
got that.
Yeah, I'm gonna do all that. Yeah. Pastas. You know, I could cook pretty much everything. I could cook Asian foods. I could cook Indian food. I could cook Mexican food. I cook soul food. What else? What am I missing? Italian food?
You said Chinese food?
I said Asian food.
Asian food.
Because I could go Chinese, I can go Japanese. I mean, I could Korean. Matter of fact, I made Korean barbecue the other day at the house. I cooked Thai, had that at the other house at the, a couple weeks ago. What else could I cook? I mean, I cook pretty good.
Cook some
food.
Vegan stuff too, you know, shout out
to Jennifer. I could cook vegan food all day long. I mean, I could get down. And, okay. And we ain't, no, this ain't everything ain't Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
No, I get down.
You fresh food, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Farmer's Market every Saturday morning, 8 a.m.
But you've done Iron Chef, Dancing with the Stars. What was that design show you had?
Tackling Design. I could design your house.
Tackling Design. But
I could
cook, you
ever, I could design your house, I could dance, I could do all that.
Would you ever do another reality show?
I would not. So the design show was different because it was fun because I got an opportunity and I like interior design. You know, I like building houses and selling them and doing all that, interior. I would do it if it made sense. I'm not doing a reality show because I don't.
Like you wouldn't do a Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
No, I don't need to do that. What am I doing that for? I don't necessarily feel like I need people digging in my trash can every single day, right, trying to find out what's going on in my life. So for me, opportunities have been there. I don't necessarily like that. People are all in my personal space. I don't like that. That's why I'm not a big social media guy. That's why I'm not a big posting of pictures of everybody in my family all the time and all that, where I'm going, how I get there, what hotel I'm staying in, what it looked like over here. I don't like all that because I don't want people. You don't need to be in my space like that, man. Don't. You're too nosy. Yeah. Go find something else to do.
So you still golfing? You still a golf guy?
I don't golf, man.
You used to golf. Pelican Hill.
I never golfed, though. We have a membership, but I don't golf.
Okay. Well, the Masters are this weekend. Jordan from Bakersfield asked, what would be the sandwich order?
The sandwich?
Yeah, those are the sandwiches for the Masters. Which one would you get?
Man, I'm gonna go ham and cheese. The rest of that shit look garbage.
Yeah, they don't
peach
change
ice cream sandwich. I'm not eating that.
They don't change the prices.
Oh, that's an ice cream sandwich.
Yeah. But they don't change the prices for the Masters. It's been $3 for.
Yeah, I'm going grilled ham and cheese. I'm gonna keep it simple. Some of that other shit that and the ice cream sandwich is good, I guess. I make those at home, by the way, just so that you know.
Well, last question. Lauren from Los Angeles asked, what was your favorite spot in L.A. or New York back in the day, like party spot? Club.
Oh, clubs?
Club. It's a little different now. Shout out Hyde, L.A.
Yeah, clubs. Growing up in L.A., the Century Club here in Century City was the spot to go to. That was like the
what was it called?
Century Club, like Century City, like the Century Club.
Okay.
That was the famous club where they was at. That was where they were at, up in there.
Mm-hmm. And then
that one, the Roxbury on Sunset, Bar One, where it's now Bootsy Bella.
Bootsy Bellows.
Yeah, Bootsy Bella. That was used to be Bar One, was the spot. The Garden Eaton was on La Brea and Hollywood Boulevard on the right-hand side on the corner. Those were like the four main spots. Then you had Glam Slam downtown, which was Prince's club that used to crack.
Those Prince, were like, the singer?
Yeah, the singer.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, then that was pretty much it. And then New York,
yeah.
New York, you had Cheetah Club, not a strip club. It was just called the Cheetah Club.
Why you look like that?
What else was there? Tunnel was good. Pink Elephant was good.
So you was outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm grown.
I'm saying.
I'm a grown man that's 20-something years old.
No, I hear
living
you.
In New York and L.A.
I hear you.
What you expect for me not to go out?
Nah, I'm on the same level.
I don't understand the problem with the generation now is they go out and they get their ass in trouble instead of just going out and enjoying themselves. It's always some chaos going on in the clubs. You know, they smoking more weed in clubs now than I ever seen. It's like, if somebody was to smoke some weed at the clubs back then, they'd come over to you and tell you got to put it out. Now, they smoking weed with you, the security.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's a different.
It's a whole different.
No, it's different. It's different. But yeah, it was better to me, in my opinion. It was better to me back then. with all the clubs than it is right now.
It's because you're old now.
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with being old. It has nothing to do with being old. It has just nothing to do with being old. It's just safer.
Really? It's,
way safer. It was way safer. Nobody was into all that type of behavior that you see nowadays in clubs. They just wasn't. Everybody was in there.
Yeah, they was trying to party.
They was trying to get at girls. Girls were trying to get at dudes. And that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. Nowadays, it'd be... Every time you look up, it's an incident. It's like, damn.
I hear you. Well, yeah, that's about it. This was lit. Appreciate it.
My son, whatever. That's a wrap for today's show. Thanks again to my son, Keyshawn Jr., for helping out with this show. Don't forget to subscribe and follow All Facts Pod on social media. Until then, we will see you next week. Peace.